This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
But you have said Walmart's calling on factory owners to make fixes, but people say owners are on razor-thin margins because the company pays such low prices so they can't pay for the correction.
Yes. When Jim Yarley and I researched the article, we spoke to some factory owners, and they say we're paid such low prices by Walmart and other Western buyers, Western retailers, that we can't afford the $500,000, $300,000 in investments in fire escapes and in enclosed staircases. And they say the folks with the big pockets should be doing this. And, Walmart has called on the Bangladesh government to get more aggressive in doing inspections and to phase out, close down unsafe plants. And Bangladesh, is so eager to attract business, it's probably not going to become a very tough policeman.
We want to thank you for being with us. Stephen Greenhouse of the New York Times will link to your article there. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty. Today, you honored listeners will help us design the perfect people's legislative agenda for the 2013 Oregon legislative session.
Hi, this is Per Fogring, host of Fight the Empire. 40 years ago, a groundbreaking book was published called The Limits to Growth. MIT researchers used computer models to project the future world economy, and many of the results pointed to collapse. Thursday's guests will be author Christian Parenti. We will discuss the limits to growth and where it all leads. That's Thursday, January 3rd at 9:30 a.m. on KBOO, your radio station.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. It is a brand new year. Happy 2013. Yay! We all made it. We're off and running. We've got a brand new city council. February 4th will be the first day of the new legislative session. And today we want to spend some time talking about let's prepare for 2013's legislative session. What would make sense for a people's legislative agenda? If you were Nike, then you already you're done with the 2013 legislative session because you've already been able to get a special session and get your favorable tax status passed by the governor. But if you're not a Nike, if you're just a regular working person, how much do you know about what will start happening in the next legislative session? Do you know what the current state budget is? Do you think that we are facing a budget cliff as well here in Oregon? If you'd like to join me in this conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. As we start preparing for this legislative session, one of the things that I think we should know is, what is the state budget? And what do we spend our money on? I mean, those are some of the basic questions that I think Oregonians may not be too clear about. So let's just take that from the top. So what is the proposed state budget that we currently are operating under? Right now, our budget comes in right at... and I just lost it. I will find that in just a minute. What I can tell you is that what do we spend our state budget on is probably one of the bigger questions. 53% of Oregon's resources are spent on education, and that's from pre-K through college. So 53% of the money in the state coffers are spent on education. Another 23% is spent on health, seniors, and children. We have a 17% that's spent on public safety, and that includes the prisons, it includes the courts, it includes those kind of services. And then we've got about another 7% that is spent on other kind of issues. And so that's the Oregon state budget in a nutshell. We right now have about, you probably would be surprised to know that right now there's probably about 750,000 Oregonians that are receiving food stamps, which is a record, both in Oregon and I do believe nationally as well. What also, you might be surprised to know that Oregon state budget actually includes about $16 billion, that's with a B, in federal funds. Most of those funds, however, come in as one-time resources for the state budget. And so as I've talked to people in the community, I know that there are a lot of groups that are working on lots of very specific legislation for the upcoming legislative session. One is the continuation of a move to create a state bank. There seems to be a lot of support, both in the last legislative session and as we lead into this one, to create a state bank at the legislative level. We also know we have to fix our tax system. If we're going to really do anything long term, we've got to fix our tax system and we've got to fix our corrections budget. I'm sure you have some other ideas of items and specific issues that we should start working on as we prepare for the 2013 legislative session. We've got some, it should be exciting. We've got the House has a 24-36 edge, a Democratic edge. The Senate has a 16-14 Democratic edge, and we have a Democratic governor. We should have a better opportunity to get some real systemic changes through this legislative session. We won't have the complaint about the same complaint that Congress has, which is one party is holding up progress of another party. So I think that might be a very good option. But we certainly have to fix the corrections budget, which is no question. And we will talk a little bit later about the governor's proposal to do just that. But we have a caller on the line. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Well, thank you, Joanne. I'm going to ask a question. And can any state legislature, or at least Oregon state legislature, create laws or something that honestly create healthy jobs, say especially for low-income people? And also, if I guess it's not possible anymore. What about rehabilitate? I mean, honest, healthy rehabilitation programs for people that are in prison or leaving prison. I'll get off the air and thank you for listening.
Thank you, Joanne. Both of your questions are very good ones, and I'll take the last one first. We currently have programs that supposedly help and support people transitioning from prison back into local communities. Very few programs, very few that require living wages, that require that you're actually developing a job skill that will lead to a living wage employment opportunity. We have very few of those opportunities available. And yes, the legislature could create a program to address that gap in opportunities in our local community. I think your first question was around kind of the authority of the legislative body, and they could pretty much take on anything, whether it's tax reform, this particular governor, I think, has been focused on education initially. He says he's also focused on tax reform, but I think that's going to be a little harder to do when you've taken the biggest potential tax contributor out of the equation. I think that's going to be much harder to do right now. Earlier, I talked about what was the projected general fund budget that we're currently operating under, and the current budget is $14.7 billion. That's $14.7 billion. That is the state budget. It is a biennial budget, which means it covers 2 years of operations, approximately. So, that's where we started the year. We certainly will have some challenges. We still have some mandatory minimum ballot measures that haven't fully been implemented, especially the one that relates to drunk drivers that was put on hold last legislative session and has not fully been implemented. That one is set to cost us a couple of billion dollars if fully implemented. So that's one of the other opportunities. I know that there is a bill being introduced by communities of color having to do with gathering data on racial profiling in local communities and setting up a process whereby people will be reporting and monitoring that activity across the state. There may be other pieces of legislation that will support that effort as well. We're going to go back to the phone line. And we're going to welcome Richard. Hello, Richard. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm fine. For quite a while now, I've wondered about the possibility of KBOO maybe creating a new show, something like Legislative Watch.
Ah.
That really focuses on the politics of Oregon. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the idea. Legislative Watch. Well, that's an excellent suggestion. I wonder what others think. Would you like to hear a program called Legislative Watch? My experience is most people aren't that engaged in the legislative process. Not that I don't think they should be, but I think many people are just so busy getting through the day-to-day that they don't spend a lot of time really following the legislative process until a really big bill comes through. I can tell you from my experience that with 3,000 bills introduced every legislative session, and with 2,000 of them actually making it through all the House and the Senate and getting the governor's signature, there's a lot of legislation that goes through. Most of it doesn't impact a large number of people, but every once in a while, you get big issues that come through. So what's on your mind? What do you think should be on the top of the legislative agenda for the people this legislative session? Give us a call at 503-231-8187 and let me know what you would like to see on that agenda. I certainly want to see some reform around how we incarcerate people in this state. I know that Governor Kitzhaber has a proposal in that would change sentencing laws in a way that would open up jail beds and still maintain public safety locally. And I understand that the committee, the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission that the governor put in place, had a proposal, but refused to vote on a proposal for the next legislative session. So I suspect we will be hearing more about that. But I'd like to hear from you. What are the ideas that you think should be on the 2013 legislative agenda? I could tell you a lot more about what I think what should be locally, but I'd love to hear what you think about what should be at the state level. We've just avoided the fiscal cliff at the federal level, at least for the next 60 days. But do we have a fiscal cliff that we're headed towards here in Oregon? That's my question. So give me a call at 503-231-8187 if you would like to join that conversation. I know that legislative organizational days, we don't even know yet who's really going to chair most of the legislative committees, because most of those decisions have not been publicized as of yet. I do know that next week, from January 14th through the 18th, will be legislative organizational days, and those will be days where all the newly elected legislators will come together and get some basic training. So understanding how bills become laws, understanding how to send requests through the Legislative Council office, to really get a sense for how the legislative process functions. And so for us as the people who want to influence that process, it is also incumbent upon us to be putting a process in place where we educate ourselves about our newly elected representatives, what their focus, what they said their focus would be when they were running for office, and what ultimately will be their focus once they are elected to public office. It will be our job to then hold them accountable. I know that there are some big legislative days coming up also. So, you know, it's not too early to start looking at your calendar and planning out those legislative trips that you're going to make. I know the Urban League of Portland has a lobby day scheduled for February 19th, 2013. I know that there is a healthcare for all legislative lobby day in February as well. And I'm going to look that up so that you can also start planning when you, as members of the general public, will take the opportunity to make your voices heard this legislative session. So we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Michael. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, Joanna. Happy New Year.
Same to you, Michael.
So, you know, I just want to talk a little bit about the law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
It's predicated more on, it's a reactionary entity in society. It's not a preventative type setup.
Right.
And I wish, and right now it seems like there's more emphasis on punishment than prevention.
Yes.
And so I would like to see the legislative session really address a lot of things in society, like, say, for instance, all of these shootings that took place, and people want to buy more guns. So, Joanne, I would like to see legislative put metal detectors in schools. I'd like to see them put metal detectors in public places where a lot of people congregate, because it used to be a myth that there was safety in numbers. That's a myth. And that's not true no more. And so instead of people coming out with more guns, they need metal detectors. I remember when I used to go out to disco. I used to be in clubs and everything.
Right.
And there was never any shootings in clubs. You know why? Because they won everybody that went in the door. And so it was the safest place out there. And so they could make schools safe. They could make society safe if they would shift their thinking now. And
so let me challenge you a little bit on that. So do you feel safer when you go to the airport and you take your shoes off and your belt off? Do you feel like, okay, I'm going to get on this plane and nothing bad could ever happen?
No, I don't, because I'm going to tell you something. I had a relative that worked at the airport. Actually, they worked over there with the people that put the food on the airplane.
Right.
And he took me inside the airport, and we bypassed all of that security. He knew a way around it.
Right. And
that's a true fact.
So that's really my point, Michael. Are we going to give people this this false sense of security, the same false sense of security we give them at the airport by putting metal detectors in all the schools?
Well, I think it would be better because, Joanne, like I said before, back in the disco days, I was out in the clubs all the time, and never once was there any type of shooting or any incident, because everybody that walked in that place was searched and it was safe. You never heard of that. So, yeah, I think that it would cut down on a lot of that stuff. America, you know, this gun thing, Joanne, first of all, America is a cowardly society. You know that. you know, very, very, most of the shootings are done in a cowardly fashion.
Yes.
When they go to war, they sit offshore and they shoot bombs miles away. They drop bombs. So it's a cowardice society. So to talk about arming a society that is cowardice anyway, it's ludicrous. So, yeah, I would like to see them to really do some hard-nosed reflection on what it's going to take to keep society safe, man. And the way they've been going, it ain't working.
Well, I totally agree with you. Your last statement, I totally agree with, Michael. What we've been doing isn't working. I'm just not sure if the metal detectors at each school is the right investment of resources at this time. But it's certainly a conversation we should be having with the legislative body, and they certainly will be taking up school safety. So I'm sure that that's an idea that's on the table. But I hope we don't let the legislature off the hook by thinking that everybody's safe now because we have metal detectors in the school.
No. Are you there?
I am, uh-huh.
No, that's not going to be there. You know, the safety factor in society, man, is based on education, based on intelligence, man.
Right.
And that's where the safety comes from. You know, we're not an intelligent society. We think we are, but we're not. You know, we're a violent, reactionary society, and that's basically the problem. Anyway, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you for the call, and have a great new year.
You too.
Thank you. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We are talking about the people's legislative agenda for 2013. Michael just called and recommended that legislators take up metal detectors in schools throughout Oregon. What's your ideas for a people's legislative agenda? Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Hello, Lee. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. Thank you for this opportunity.
You're welcome.
One of the things that I've thought about for a number of years relates to the issue of a state bank.
Ah, yes.
And one of the things that I would like to see if a state bank were enacted is that a certain percentage of PERS money be invested in that bank rather than in Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And basically, I'd like to see it used for mortgages for people and for business loans and business development in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, when we take PERS money and send it to Wall Street, those companies, corporations, can basically invest it and use it in direct competition for what's best for Oregon.
Right. And they're not required to spend it for the benefit of Oregon.
That's correct.
Right.
And if we had a state bank that, you know, at least the large volume of PERS money wouldn't get lost in scams like the Enron deal.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think it would be much more beneficial to know that the people who were receiving PERS money were putting Oregon first.
Well, thank you so much.
I don't know if that's possible.
I don't know if it is either, but thank you for putting it out there.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
I'm going to try and stay warm.
All right. Yeah, that's a challenge today.
Bye.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Barbara. Welcome to
yes.
KBOO.
I heard someone speak of a buzzer for schools that someone would have to be buzzed in, or a metal detector.
Right.
And I was thinking, I wanted to make some analogies, like at the library, if someone carries out a book accidentally or otherwise, there's this great buzz that stops them in their tracks. They did something wrong. So it seems like a mechanism that could be used for schools. If someone was carrying a gun, that they could have a buzzer system that would respond to that. Not that I know how to do that, but I think that would be one piece of the solution.
It's definitely on the list. So metal detector or some kind of buzzer that would detect weapons.
Yeah. And also the terrible slipshod lack of checking up on people who can buy guns. I know they have these terrible gun shows with weapons by the thousands laid out. And up until now, at least, it seems evident that people could pretty much get one without very much checking.
I just have to say that many of the tragedies that we hear about, we find out that people got guns legally, right? So they weren't stolen, they weren't, you know, they didn't break into a gun shop or they didn't go on a rampage somewhere to obtain the weapon. So I just want to say that it's not the weapon by itself. It may be where they purchased it. It may be the types of weapons that are purchased. I'm not sure.
Well, what I was thinking is that, and this is, again, just another small piece mm-hmm. of the solution, that to drive a car, which is a weapon of sorts, you can kill people, you have to have a license and supposedly a certain amount of background checking. So I would think a person would need a license, and I guess in some states they get this done, in other states they don't. But I know that they have these gun shows where people can pretty much just walk in and get a weapon without too much checking. So I think they should be licensed and have to show a license. And the license might have to depend on what is your need, not, you know.
Well, thank you for your idea. So I've added that to a potential list. Have a great day.
Thank you,
Thank
Joanne.
You for your call. Well, we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Dan. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello. Thank you. It's a good idea for a show.
Thank you.
I heard you earlier say that I think what you said was the school portion of the budget is 53%.
That's correct.
Is that right?
That's right.
So this is huge, right?
Right.
And, of course, we know money is a major problem mm-hmm. now, and the school budget has always been a, you know, tremendous problem. And so my suggestion will not only, I think, greatly help with the budget problem for the schools, but also improve the education. And years ago, I looked into this, and many years ago, the cost for the public schools in the Portland area was $11,000 per student. And so I would imagine it's at least $12,000 per student by now, because that may have even been 10 years ago, at least five years ago. And so if you take a classroom of 25 students, okay, each of those students represents $12,000. I did the math before I called here. That comes to $300,000 per classroom of 25 students, $300,000. Now, if the teacher's making $80,000 a year, let's say, with benefits and all that, that still leaves $220,000 left over. So all that $300,000 isn't going to the teacher in the classroom. It's going somewhere else. So to me, I'll cut that short right there and give my idea, because to me that makes it obvious that something is very wrong with the picture here. So my idea is to start a voucher system where the voucher is only $8,000 per year. That automatically, that's a one-third cut. That's two-thirds of the current $12,000. So that's going to save a gigantic amount of money. If you give parents a voucher, you figure if you want to send your child to a private school, the state will give you $8,000. You know, you can either make it or not. You know, if you can't do it, then you're going to have to forget it. You're not going to be sending them to Catlin Gable for that.
So, the flaw with that is, so you would, so every parent would get, say, $8,000. That's the figure you use.
Right.
And so if most education costs more than that, then there would be some parents who would not have a problem with being able to pay more for a private school education. But there would be parents, some parents that would not have the resources to be able to pay for a quality education for their kids. So,
well, no, but what my point is that $8,000 per year is plenty to pay for a private education.
Well, I can't.
It's very easy to do that.
I don't know. I don't know that that is so. And I can't sit here and just tell you what it costs because I'm not an educator myself. So I don't know what it costs to educate per kid. I can certainly tell you that we spend a lot. And we spend a lot not based on needs of kids. We spend a lot based on geography and how much we pay per kid. So it costs more to educate kids in an urban area than it does a rural area. Some people would say that's not true because it costs more in transportation. But that's another show. But thank you for your idea.
Let me just say one last
Your voucher idea is on the table. I'm going to have to go. I have several callers back there.
It'll start competition, too.
Well, I wish that were so.
The schools now, you know, they can do a lousy job. The graduation rate is the people drop out.
This is a longer conversation, sir.
It's boring.
And we should have a conversation about education, but today won't be that day. Thank you. Have a good day. Hello, Mark. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm thinking one thing that's been on the table for a long time but hasn't really been discussed too much is the sales tax for Oregon. I mean, it's ridiculous, I think, that we don't have a sales tax on items for paying for government services and possibly even, you know, possibly even lowering some property tax rates if we do have a sales tax. And considering all the tourists that come to Oregon, they're not coming here because there's no sales tax. They're coming here because it's a great state and there's a lot to see and do. And there's just, you know, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars that is lost every year because there's not just a basic sales tax to help fund a lot of these critical infrastructure needs.
Well, I can't disagree with you there, but no, I haven't heard anybody bring up the S word in quite some time. But
yeah,
well, I will add sales tax to the list of the people's agenda, and we'll see where that goes. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Well, we've got lots of folks that have lined up already with some ideas about metal detectors in the schools, a state bank, a potential buzzer that would alert people to weapons. We've talked about vouchers. We've talked sales tax. We're going to go back to the phone line and talk to Dave and see what he has in store. Welcome, Dave.
Jillian, thanks for having me on the air. A quick suggestion to Voucher Man and people who think like him. I would rather suggest an idea to force more middle and even upper middle class parents back in the game of public schooling, that private school tuition and homeschooling supplies should be subject to a very large sales tax, say 1,000 to 10,000% sales tax. We've got to get more parents' skin back in that game, no matter how we do it. It's just too easy to opt out. And another suggestion, to save money without resorting to vouchers, roll all Portland public school teacher salary back to 1985 levels, but at the same time give Portland public school teachers the right to buy or rent any housing they choose at 1985 prices. That's my suggestion. I'll get off the air. Thanks.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait, you can't just put that out there and run off the air. No, you got to hang out for a minute, okay? I got a couple of questions for you. So if you roll the salaries back to 85, the cost of living, gas, heat, et cetera, et cetera, you know, it's like how do people live on 85 wages?
I'm suggesting this as a way to bring people's attention to housing prices as how they affect teachers' ability to make a living. I know it's not the only cost of living there is, but it's a big one and it's a visible one.
And so I don't know. I think people are pretty into their own world, unless you're a teacher. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure how that would impact me, say, as a radio host.
Okay.
Right? How would that impact my life if a teacher had to live on 85, a salary from 85?
Probably a number of ways, especially if you're a landlord or you're selling a house. Because the package would give the teacher the right to 1985 prices on living space.
Well, I understand your premise about, you know, if the teacher's salary is stuck at an 85 salary and the housing is stuck at 85, it doesn't change the fact that everything else is at 2013 prices, right? And so I'm just trying to figure out, I mean, if I'm not a teacher and I don't have a kid in public school, why would I care?
Okay, that's a little crazy. But the other one, I really think that too many parents have the option of getting out of public schools.
Well, you know, we don't have that problem in Oregon. 85% of the parents who have the ability to put their kids in private school elect to have their kids in public school. So, many states around the country have a much bigger problem than we do. Now, I think after 20 years of defunding public education, the number might be shifting a little bit. But 85 is a significant high number of people.
It is very high, and that's good.
Yeah, who have a choice, who have stuck with the public education system. But having said that, I'm not quite sure if they had to make the same choice again today that they would do that.
Well, I think private school tuition and homeschooling supplies need to be taxed at a high enough rate to either be a barrier or make people think. And that way you'll get more parents who are affluent enough or would have been affluent enough at current prices without the tax to put their kids in private school. You will focus their attention on public schools.
Well, I got to tell you, what I know about at least the Portland metro area is that less than 20% of people have kids in the public school system. Right? So you've got 80% of the population that don't have kids directly impacted by the public education system, and you've got a public education system that has been kind of unwelcoming to people. Even if they have kids in the school, if they don't have kids in the school, they're certainly not welcoming. And so there's a disconnect there, right? It's like, because as somebody who doesn't have any kids in the public school system, but I hear every single year, we need more money, we need more money, we need to raise more taxes, we need to raise more taxes. And so in 2013, right, I'm going to have a new tax bill, over $700, most of it supposedly covering kids that I don't have, right? And that's another $700 on top of what my tax bill already is. Yeah. So I don't think we're making the case. I don't think you've made the case for why we need to invest more in a public education system that doesn't appear to be well educating anybody's kids, but certainly not kids of color. I mean, in fact, Portland graduates, I think there was some horrible statistic I just read, like 56% of white males graduate from Portland public schools. That's horrible.
Yeah.
Right? So we got some work to do. So I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I just wanted to think through this because, you know, I'm like the other, you know, there's 79% of people like me out there who don't have kids in the school but keep getting head up for money, and we don't know what's happening to that money. It just disappears. And then guess what? Next election, they'll be back asking for more. So I don't know if money by itself is going to fix what's broken.
That's it's more significant to hear that from a progressive like you than to hear it from people on the other side of the political argument, too.
Well, thank you, because sometimes I feel like I shouldn't say that out loud. But it's true. I mean, it's like, that's a lot of money for me in one year. But next year, there'll be another ballot, and they'll want more. Have a great day. Thank you for your call. Well, we got several callers lined up. Do you have a legislative agenda item you want to add? If so, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Hello, Ernest. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Ernest.
Just wanted a little fact-checking here. The fellow was earlier who called in who was talking about the cost per student.
Oh, $11,000, that guy?
Right. It's more like $6,000 per student in Oregon. Statewide.
I thought that was a little high. But.
Yeah. But anyway, but I also, and I'll just throw out this last little tidbit, I tend to agree with our fellow who called, who also called earlier, who was talking about adding a significant tax to
homeschool and private school, right?
Yeah, the direction in which that notion was going anyway, and I can say anecdotally in my kids' elementary school in Portland Public Schools, excellent school, excellent class and all that. Every single year, and he's been there since pre-K, he's in seventh grade now, every year, one of the three smartest kids in the class goes somewhere else, private school or out of state.
Uh-huh.
Every single year. And my kid's probably going to be leaving Portland Public Schools soon as well.
Uh-huh.
But
and it's because of the quality of the education?
It comes down to class size.
Mm.
I think it's all about class size. He's got great teachers. The school is great. Great parents. Everything around it is great. The class sizes are too big. It's impossible for teachers to direct learning. Individualized learning for kids when you've got in high schools. Another friend of mine is a teacher in Portland Public Schools. He's got English classes with 40 to 50 students in them. That just is not sustainable. You can't graduate kids with those numbers.
No.
Who can function well beyond high school, et cetera, in this society these days.
So how do we fix it? I mean, because, you may have heard me say earlier, I get tired of being asked for more money, more money, more money. When at the end, the results, right, are we're graduating less kids. They're less prepared when they get out.
Yeah,
so,
but I think it starts with one of the things it starts with is more money. And if you look at how low our tax rate is, generally speaking, compared to what it was, say, back in 85, we were talking about earlier, we're paying, I don't know the specific numbers, but I know we're paying lots less in taxes, property taxes and otherwise, than we were 20 or 30 years ago, way less.
Actually, it's just been shifted. It used to be a balance between what businesses paid and what individuals pay. Now individuals pay 85% and businesses pay 15%. So it's not. So I disagree that our tax rate is so low. That some people, like Nike, was able to get a great 30-year deal a couple of weeks back. You and I won't be able to get that deal.
Right.
So I think that I think we have to be clear about who's paying less taxes and who's paying more taxes. And it's certainly not those of us whose property tax bill just went up over $700.
Yeah.
Right. I just think that we're putting a burden on a middle class that doesn't exist anymore. And so we got to figure out how we share the burden. And man, this doesn't feel like a shared burden. This feels like let's just put it all on people who, really are on the brink of not being able to pay anything.
Yeah. No, there's some truth in that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a fabulous day.
You too.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Carl. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Yes. Okay. Here's a factoid. You can check me out on this. A few years ago, I can't even remember what the publication was, some little newsletter or whatever. And the thing that stuck in my mind was that in the state of Oregon, in contributions to political campaigns, the biggest single contributor was the Oregon Education Association, the teachers' union, to political campaign funds. Okay. Check me out on that.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I think they may.
Well,
I mean,
I read it, and I'm offering it to you.
Okay.
And you can check the fact.
I will check the fact. But what I think you may have read was that the Oregon Education Association was the biggest Democratic contributor, which is different than saying the biggest campaign contributor.
That could be. Could be.
Yes. I'm sure that that's a more accurate statement.
Okay.
But your point? Did you have a point, or was that just it?
That is the point.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Have a great day.
You too.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. We have been talking about developing a people's legislative agenda. And people have called in with some really interesting ideas. What I find interesting about most of the callers was it really has been focused around the education environment. So clearly, education is on the minds of a lot of Oregonians this morning, whether we're talking about school safety as it relates to metal detectors and buzzers that would identify weapons that are hidden on people's bodies, whether we're talking about developing a 1,000% tax on middle and high school private and homeschool curriculums so that we would pay for additional public education improvements. There seems to be a lot of focus around the education environment. And one other idea was around the state bank, where a percentage of the PERS money could be invested in a bank that developed businesses specific to Oregon and the needs of Oregonians, all of which I think are really fabulous ideas. But how do you get your ideas from being an idea to actually a legislative agenda? First, I would recommend contacting your legislator. And if you need to find out who they are, you could simply go online and put Oregon State Legislature into the search engine, and they will ask for your zip code, and they will tell you who your House member is and who your Senate member is. And then you will be able to let them know what legislation you'd like to see introduced. So we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Kelly. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne. I'm calling about food security and food issues. I think that we should consider legislation around banning growing genetically engineered foods, banning genetically engineered salmon, and the labeling genetically engineered products. I think we don't really understand what a risk they are in Oregon to our local organic farmers, our feedstock growers, etc. I think that's a huge issue. And to me, money, you know, you can crunch money problems, but once you've messed up our ecosystem.
Your food supply, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad that we're broadening the agenda, and I think that that's a wonderful addition. So thank you. And do you have a legislation in, or is this?
Well, we're working on it. I'm part of GMO Free Oregon.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye. So genetically engineered food, there's a proposal under development. Back to the phone line. Hello, Joe. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
I, after the failure of the marijuana initiative at the last general election, I would like to see the legislature address the industrial hemp legalization thereof so that we can start making money off some agricultural products that might actually solve some problems.
I agree. And actually, I think the only reason it didn't pass in Oregon is because there wasn't a campaign in Oregon. There was a campaign.
The reason it didn't pass is because all the people that are growing it voted against it so they can keep the prices up. That's the word I heard from a half a dozen people that grow.
Well,
didn't want the price to collapse.
I just think that we don't do a really good job. I don't know who decides who
all
runs.
I know that grow it commercially.
That's what they said, huh?
They don't want the price going down. That's happened in Humboldt County for 30 years now, you know. Keep the price up.
Okay,
so,
well.
But the industrial thing could bring us millions and millions of dollars of state revenue, and we need to get on it.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. And I know that's been introduced every year for quite some time, so we'll see what happens this year. Back to the phone line. Hello, Al. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, this is Mel.
Oh, hi, Mel. Sorry. How are you?
See, I have a suggestion. Something that's bothered me for years is school or churches and lodges and things like that don't pay taxes. But I'd be compassionate about it. If you look at the average homeowner's tax bill, probably 60% of it goes for some level of education. So I would take that off of there because they use our streets, our water, our sewers, our fire department, emergency services, police, fire, everything, and I think that would be a fair assessment of church and lodge property.
So you're recommending not a totally tax-free, but some graduated tax system for churches and lodges and other kind of organizations like that?
Correct. That way, because they do use the public facilities, and this way they'd be contributing to everything in government except for the schools, which they use our sewers, our water, our emergency services, and I think that would be fair because 60% of your average property tax bill probably goes to schools, so they get an automatic 60% reduction.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate the call.
You bet.
Have a great day. Okay, we got a little bit more time. We can get a couple of more callers in. And we'll get back to the phone line in just a sec to see what other ideas. So the latest one is to change the tax code to reflect public services that churches and lodges and other types of organizations use. Hello, John. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello. I'd like to suggest two items for the Oregon legislature agenda.
All right.
One would be a universal right to vote at age 18, regardless of one's living situation. I think that would help reduce police profiling if they knew that those that they put in jail could still vote.
Well, they can.
I wasn't aware of that.
Today, yeah. They can vote in jail, yes.
Okay. And the other one is I'd like to suggest a carbon tax. That global warming needs to be addressed, and so those that don't own a car, they do it the James Hansen model that everybody in the state gets a state refund on a monthly basis based on the carbon footprint of what's consumed in the state that month.
Okay.
Okay. And third, I'd like to suggest on a cap. On the cap retirement salaries, I think it's obscene that the retired president of the University of Oregon is collecting $500,000 a year. That greatly distorts and subtracts from the ability of the state to provide public services when there are such high retirement salaries to some people, like the University of Oregon football coach, another $500,000 a year public trough feeder.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Yeah, I don't understand why a football coach would make that kind of money anyway, but, I'm sure somebody's going to send me hate mail because I said that. Thank you so much for your call. I want you to know what's coming up today and why you should stay tuned to KBOO at 9 here at Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Pear interviews Kristen Parentine about the limits to growth and the possibility of the collapse of the world's economy. At 10, Flashpoint looks at the use of torture by the Central Intelligence Agency as portrayed in the recent film Zero Dark 30. Also, more on the deal to avoid the fiscal cliff. At 11 on Between the Covers, the guest is award-winning writer Juno Diaz. At 11:30, Black Book Talk presents a discussion of the first Americans were Africans, a book which says that Africans were the first Americans and they arrived 51,000 years prior to the Mongolians. Thanks, listeners, and thanks, KBOO, for your ongoing support. You keep us strong as you stay connected. We're going to go back to the phone line now. Hello, Becca. Welcome to KBOO.
The possibility of the
hello. I think. Hello, Thomas. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, how are you doing?
Really good. How about you?
I'm doing well. I was calling. This program got me thinking. I didn't hear the beginning where it sounded like somebody was talking about the creation of a state bank. And
mm-hmm.
So something that I have in mind is that would kind of tie hand in hand with this would be that, you know, if we did have a state bank or some kind of a fund to help support building of kind of local businesses, but in a real sense, not just local wealth owning a business here, but actual products from Oregon produced by Oregonians for mostly people in Oregon. You could tie that in with the hemp production because that's an incredibly useful resource. But basically, I guess what I'm trying to get at is that if the state bank or the legislature without the creation of a bank could facilitate funding for startup funds for businesses that with a stipulation that they be democratically owned and operated by the workers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, therefore giving power to the community to decide what's healthy and what's not for themselves, and also not reinforcing a capitalist system which sucks money up to the top and creates an additional need for social services that I feel like should be completely unnecessary.
You know, great ideas, all of them, and I've added them to the list. And it's funny because 3 or 4 years back when the stimulus money was first coming out, I thought, wouldn't that be a great opportunity to take money and kind of invest it in creating some homegrown businesses that would be sustainable for the future, that would create green jobs, living wage opportunities, and worker ownership. So you and I were definitely on the same page. We're visionaries. We were far ahead of this plan.
Right on.
Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye. Looks like we've got one more caller we could squeak in. Hello, Jack. Welcome to K-Boo. You get the last word. Hello, Becca. Welcome to K-Boo. You get the last word.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I would like to see subsidy of our local organic farmers.
Subsidies of local organic farmers.
Organic farmers, yeah. Moving money from the subsidies for genetically modified corn and wheat on a federal level.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
There's one more piece to that.
All right.
I would like to see establishment of greenhouses in the Oregon area to help stabilize the local food supply.
Thank you so much. I think that's absolutely key, especially the more we find out about disasters around the world, we definitely need to make sure we're protecting our own food.
It is. Now, down in Southern Oregon, they have a growing program with the Oregon Food Bank working with them to increase their supply of gardens down there for the local food supply.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. Have a
You're
great day.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye now. We've had a steady stream of really fabulous ideas for the upcoming legislative session. It will begin on February 4th. You've got plenty of opportunity to connect with your Oregon legislator, your Oregon State Senator. I am Joanne Hardesty. It's been a pleasure being here today. Can't wait to see you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day, and thank you, Steve, for your help.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that bitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Don't give up the fight.
dancing and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours unhurt. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah. Get up, stand up, jump, jump. Stand up for your rights.
Good morning, you're listening to KBOO Portland. Thursday morning, Teresa Mitchell is coming up next with Press Watch. It's news you're not supposed to know, and that is coming up next.
KBOO Radio is a proud media sponsor of the 28th annual Martin Luther King Day event. Keep Alive the Dream, an annual tribute to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., produced by the World Arts Foundation. This year's event will take place at the New Beginnings Conference Center, 3300 Northeast 172nd Place in Portland. KBOO will again broadcast the annual celebration in its entirety. More information about this live broadcast can be found at kboo.fm/2013MLK.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New mobile applications available for iPhone and Android. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.